You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Hang out with a bunch of gay guys, say on a deck with booze in the summer. And you'll almost always hear jokes about how we were all seduced into homosexuality, how we all spend every weekend in bathhouses taking loads and slings, how we're all attracted to boys. I said there were always jokes. I didn't say the jokes were always funny. And you'll hear stuff, jokes, comments, quotes from guys who identify with tragic women, from Maria of Romania to Judy Garland to Britney Spears. It's a long-running theme. A lot of the jokes gay men tell each other, about each other, on decks with drinks in our hands, again, not all of them funny. A lot of those jokes are about the lies we've been told, or we were told, about ourselves, particularly the lies we were told growing up, lies we were told by our parents, by our peers, by our preachers and teachers, lies we were told over and over again about being gay, long before most of us realized that we were ourselves gay. And that's a big problem in our lives, because we internalize those lies that we're told about ourselves long before we realize we're gay. And then we have to unlearn all those lies. We have to throw them all up. And it's not an easy process, especially when you have to help your family unlearn the lies they were telling you, the lies they told you about you, the lies they were told and believed. To make it to one of those decks filled with gay men, which isn't my scene because I'm an introvert and I'm not a drinker or a swimsuit person, but I've been on enough of those decks to know what they're like. To make it to one of those decks, you've got to come out. And to come out, you have to accept yourself. And to accept yourself, you have to really deprogram yourself. You have to unlearn those lies that you were told. And after you're done, after you've done the hard work of de-internalizing all of that shit you're left with, well, a certain amount of anger. Anger about having been told those lies in the first place. Lies about you. Lies that could have destroyed you. Lies that you know have destroyed other gay men. And what do you do with that anger? Well, a lot of us make jokes. And one common way we joke about the lies we're told is to pretend they're true. To send them up by inhabiting them, by exaggerating them, by really leaning into them to show just how ridiculous and untrue they are. Which is why the guy who didn't lose his virginity until 4 years after he came out will joke about having been seduced into the quote-unquote homosexual lifestyle. Which is why the guy who is exclusively attracted to older, heavier, hairier dudes will joke about high school wrestling teams. Which is why the guy in a monogamous relationship will joke about having taken loads all weekend in a sling in a bathhouse. But the anger that inspires most gay men to make these sorts of jokes, it inspires others to make art. Giovanni's Room by James Baldwin. That is art, and it is angry. If you haven't read it, you should. You should read all of Baldwin. And you should watch, if you haven't already, Call Me By Your Name, the new song and video by singer and songwriter Lil Nas X. It's an extremely catchy tune, a beautifully art-directed video, and an extremely angry work of queer art. Lil Nas, whose breakout hit was the double Grammy-winning Old Town Road, has followed that up with something you've got to see it to believe it. And I'm guessing you've already seen it. Tens of millions of people have. Or maybe I should say you've got to see it to disbelieve it, because the video is really about a lie Lil Nas was told, a lie that so many of us were told about being gay when we were growing up to be gay. Among the worst, if not actually the worst lie that we're told is that we're going to hell, that God hates us, and that homosexuality is the work of the devil, and that gay people are possessed by demons. You don't have to take my word for Lil Nas's new song and video being inspired by that anger, anger at being told these lies. I spent my entire teen years hating myself because of the shit y'all preached would happen to me because I was gay, Lil Nas wrote in a post on social media. So I hope you are mad after watching his new video. I hope you stay mad. Feel the same anger you teach us to have towards ourselves. Lil Nas leans into it. You say I'm going to hell? Okay, I'll go to hell and I'll give Satan a fucking lap dance. I'll ride a stripper pole down to hell in a pair of high-heeled boots. You say I'm possessed by demons? Fuck that. I'm going to kill Satan and take his motherfucking throne. A demon? I'm going to be the demon. Happy now? It's so over the top. It's camp, bright and shiny and brave and so, so angry. And it does what so much gay humor does, what so much queer humor does. It inhabits and exaggerates the lies that are told about us, lies that are told to us, and by doing so, explodes them. If this is what you think, and this is what you said, let's take a look at it. This is what it would look like. You can't still think this. And if you don't like looking at this, the video says, if you don't like videos like this existing, then maybe you should stop telling the fucking lies that made a video, a song, a work of art like this, not just possible, but absolutely necessary. In a development I'd like to think is related, according to a new poll, church attendance in the U.S., down to an all-time low. Fewer than 50% of Americans are members of a church now, just 47%. Compared to 70% in 1999. That number was just 76% in 1950, so it's been pretty stable, church membership, for a long time. But lately? Yeah, no. Turns out you can only rape so many children. Turns out you can only fleece so many members of your own flock. Turns out you can only live in so many obscene mega mansions and own so many private jets and only buy so many pairs of $5,000 sneakers and only watch your wife fuck only so many pool boys. And you can only tell so many lies about queer people. You can only tell so many lies about gay, lesbian, bi, and trans people to the straight members of our families who have apologized to us for believing and repeating your lies. You can only do that for so long, all that, before people start to get sick of your fucking bullshit and walk the fuck away. And some of the folks who walk away, who see through your bullshit, who unlearn those lies, are going to tell jokes. And some are going to make art. Art that makes your lies look as ridiculous as they are. Art that opens more people's eyes to those lies and results in more people walking the fuck away from your churches. All right, coming up this week on the Micro and the Magnum editions of the Savage Lovecast, comedian, producer, actor Nick Kroll is here. He's with us for a little bit on the micro free edition of the Savage Lovecast. And all of Nick Kroll taking questions, talking about the show, can be found on the Magnum Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. All that coming up right now. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Harry's, the makers of the best razors ever. New customers get a special offer and a Harry's starter set and body wash at harrys.com/savage. You make fixes around the house, why not fix your ED too? Roman's licensed healthcare professionals can help you find the best treatment. Visit GetRoman.com/savage for $15 off your first order. That's GetRoman.com/savage. This episode of Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace, online therapy that makes it easy to get extra mental health support. For $100 off your first month, go to Talkspace.com and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I have a COVID success story that I wanted to share. So my partner and I have been together for 3 years after being friends for 5. And throughout our friendship, we had much sexual tension. But when we were both finally single and could come together, the sex was amazing and mind-blowing. And he then promptly got a job that was super stressful and tanked his libido. And it made our relationship crazy stressful until just as quarantine started and we got our shit together and figured out what we were doing. And literally the same month that COVID started, we figured everything out. So since then, for the past year, we've been having great sex that makes both of us happy. And the other week, we decided that we were going to try having sex on acid, which neither of us had ever done before. So we took the acid, started listening to some good music, got naked, and we're cuddling in bed, and just had the most mind-blowing fucking sex of either of our lives. Like, getting your pussy eaten while high on acid is goddamn life-changing. It was unbelievable. We had the most relationship affirming conversation afterwards while we both were still naked and rolling around, and it was just so wonderful. And since then, we've just unlocked this playful nature in our relationship that I feel was hidden from us for so long. We're flirtier with each other and sexier with each other, and just in general, just more sexual with each other. For anyone out there who likes getting their pussy and is open to a psychedelic experience, I would highly, 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 highly recommend getting your pussy eaten on acid.
Acid. Individual results may vary. But you've convinced me, caller. I am totally going to go out there and get my pussy eaten on acid. Acid's one of those things, moderation in all things, including moderation, but especially with something like acid. If you want to read more about drugs and love and sex and romance and relationships and how there's an interplay there and perhaps a benefit, I would recommend Love Drugs by Brian Earp and Julian Savulescu, Savage Lovecast guest Brian Earp. But thank you, caller. Thank you for sharing your success story. If you want us to open next week's Lovecast with your success story, give us a call, 206-302-2064, and we might play your success story before we get to other people's problems at the top of next week's show.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 40-something years old woman living in California. So I've gone on many dates. And the question I have is, when is it an appropriate time to discuss your expectations of an open relationship when you just meet someone, especially, you know, on apps? So the first date is on Zoom frequently, recently, actually only. And I've been on so many dates when a person I'm seeing would just lay it out in much detail and, you know, like what exactly they want, how open, conversion and everything. And I mean, on my profile, you can see that I'm open to non-monogamy, especially OkCupid has it very clear. So it's not new information that we're discovering, and there's probably, you know, probably chat it. But I get very bored and kind of turned off by that being a big subject on the first date, you know, on Zoom, for instance, also, because I feel like it's too early. It's too early. I don't know if I'm going to even have a second date with you. So why are we talking about such interesting subject? And I also just don't feel that we have that rapport yet. I feel it's too early. What do you think, Dan? Am I wrong?
By putting on your profile that you're open to non-monogamy, interested in perhaps open relationships, you're raising the subject of open relationships and non-monogamy conversion first and opening the door to that conversation. And you're going to attract attention from people who are interested in that, and maybe that first, you know, when people who are into non-monogamy or open to an open relationship or interested in polyamorous relationships, date people who are normies, date people who don't want any of those things or don't indicate that they want any of those things. Openness, the kind of relationship model that they would prefer, becomes this subject they have to tap dance around and maybe tiptoe up to. And so you're probably just attracting a lot of people who are excited to be talking to someone who's on the same page with them about this thing, about a big important thing that you two have in common. And so I can understand why some of the people that you're going on these first internet dates with are a little maybe excited about this topic, because if they're out there dating a lot of people and meeting a lot of people and they're not selecting exclusively for people who are open to open relationships, you may be a rare first date or date that they ever get to talk about this at all with ever. And maybe they're a little bit too excited about it. Seems to me that there's a simple corrective here, which is not to take it off your profile, is just when the person raises the subject, first goes there, gets excited to be talking with somebody who's open to talking about this, say, hey, we can talk about relationship models down the road. Let's just figure out if we want to have a relationship at all. And that means getting to know each other. And this is a given. I'm into open to open relationships. You're open to open to relationships. What else are you into or open to? What else are you about besides that's not enough to build a relationship around or establish that we have the kind of rapport required, or that we would both require, mutually required, for us to continue to date. And at that point, we can talk about what kind of relationship we're going to be in, what model. And since we both know we're open to open, we don't have to talk about that anymore. Tell me what you thought of WandaVision. After you've said that, if they keep going to it, if they keep bringing it back, well, then they've exposed themselves to you as someone who isn't listening, doesn't listen, doesn't take in how you feel or what you want, isn't interested in your opinions or desires in establishing the relationship, much less shaping the relationship, and then you can end it. But at least give the person that you're having that first online date with who goes there too quickly the chance of backing the fuck up and shifting to some other topic to establish mutual interest and desire. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace. When you put your mental and emotional health first, especially in these uncertain times, it has the positive trickle-down effect of making everything else in your life better. Your relationships get stronger, your self-worth grows. These are just a few of the reasons why working with a therapist to prioritize our mental health can really change lives for the better across the board. I wholeheartedly recommend Talkspace for therapy. You can sign up online and start therapy the same day as you sign up. You can text, video, or send voice messages to your licensed therapist, so it's incredibly convenient to have virtual sessions when you need them from the comfort of your home. Talkspace has thousands of licensed therapists with years of experience in over 40 specialties, including depression, anxiety, substance abuse, trauma, anger management, relationship issues, food and eating, and much more. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $100 off your first month with Talkspace. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com. Make sure to use the code SAVAGE to get $100 off your first month and show your support for the Lovecast. That's SAVAGE at Talkspace.com.
Hi, Dan. This is Matt from Temple, Texas. So I have a friend who has a transgendered son, female to male, and she's been having a lot of difficulty dating because his girlfriends, when they see the transition scars, they run away. When is the right time for a trans person to tell them that they're trans? Should they be looking at straight people or bisexual people or gay people?
I can't imagine your friend's son is confiding in you about his dating life and the challenges. That means, or I'm going to assume, that your friend's son is confiding in their parent, and his mom, is confiding in you. And isn't that nice that this trans kid has supportive friends and family? I'm concerned that this trans kid, this trans boy, is in perhaps Temple, Texas with y'all. Not that Temple, Texas isn't a lovely place. Not that there aren't good and decent and trans supportive people in Temple, Texas. You, caller, are proof that there are. But the bigger the city, the more progressive the city, the more people in that city who are trans, the more people in that city who are open to dating trans people, the more options your friend's son will have. And so maybe your friend's son already lives in Seattle or Portland or somewhere where there's a large trans community and a large community of cis people who embrace trans people and welcome trans people and date trans people and partner with trans people. Not that trans people also can't partner with each other. They can and they do. But if this kid is still in Temple, Texas, I think the long-term plan has to be to get the fuck out of Temple, Texas. And the question you ask on this kid's behalf, when should he tell people that he's trans? Speaking to my trans friends, and when you see trans people online being fully themselves and fully out online, I think the current best advice is to be open about being trans out of the gate. That might mean that some of the girls your friend's son is interested in won't want to date him, won't be open to dating him. That spares him the trouble and drama and heartache of having to confess that he's trans at some point, come out about being trans, and then be rejected for being trans. What he wants to do is let go of that scarcity mindset, that if I'm open about being trans, no one's going to want to date me, and embrace the abundance mindset, the abundance reality of right now, in that there are plenty of people out there, a lot of people out there, cis people, who are open to dating trans guys. And those are the people whose attentions he should want to attract. Now, maybe it's not safe if this kid lives in Temple, Texas, for him to be out about being trans. And that changes things. So he may want to wait and get to know somebody that he's interested in romantically, and get to a place where he feels he can really trust that person, whether or not that person wants to continue on in the relationship after the big reveal, but at least trust that that person isn't going to run around town maliciously gossiping about him and perhaps putting his life in danger. And that may be a valid strategy, dating and romance strategy, for right now. He can weed out the women that he meets who aren't interested in him as a trans guy after going on a few dates and then coming out to them as trans. I think it would be in his best interest long term to get to a bigger city, to get to a place where he's going to feel safer being out about being trans. And then that'll weed out the women who aren't interested in him because he's trans before he goes on that first date, before they have a chance to break his heart. And it'll attract women who are open to dating trans guys, might attract some women who are going to fetishize trans guys. You can pick through those people. Sometimes people can fetishize or objectify someone, but also recognize and embrace and honor and respect their full humanity. And that's kind of a Yahtzee, I think. But not everybody would agree with me on that. So good that your friend's son has other adults around him in his life who are currently working on using his correct pronouns. And good for you for self-correcting a couple of times there. And my advice for him would be to think about getting to a bigger city, somewhere bigger and more welcoming with more options romantically and socially for trans people than Temple, Texas. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Roman, a men's health company providing medication for ED prescribed online and delivered to your door. ED is a problem that affects so many men and the people who love them. So many men also try to ignore it, but there's no reason to ignore the problem when you have safe, effective medication available. It's time to take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/Savage now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/Savage and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/Savage now and you'll get $15 off your first month. It's really time to take care of your ED. And remember, get started today and you'll save $15 off your first order of ED treatment.
Hey, Dan. Hey, I'm a 32-year-old cis hetero dude calling in from Austin, Texas, and I could use your advice. It's occurred to me that maybe I'm just not that good at dating. I actually really like monogamy, and I think I've always been a good boyfriend in the past, and I'm kind of just getting back into the dating game after 2 years, but the actual process of talking with new people, using the apps, doing FaceTime dates, meeting up in real life, it isn't always that fun. Or, you know, it can be fun until it doesn't work out over and over and over again. And I feel like this is just compounded by the fact that my overall social skills have kind of like degraded over the last year of working from home and not getting out that much. So I thought I would call you because I bet a lot of other people are feeling that too. So how can we make first dates fun and light and potentially lead to something more?
Your social skills have degraded over the last year. You haven't been getting out much, working at home. You have so much in common with so many women out there who may be feeling exactly the same way I would if I were you. Lead with that on your online dating profiles, on Tinder. Social skills, dating skills, rusty, need practice. That's kind of charming and truthful. And I think a lot of people out there would relate to that and might want to go on a few practice first dates with you. And maybe if you labeled them practice first dates, the stakes wouldn't seem so high. If you're this crushed after a first date or a brand new relationship, a new girlfriend-boyfriend thing doesn't work out over the long run, it seems to me you're investing too much in it or attaching too much meaning and importance to a relationship early on and then too much meaning and significance to those new relationships for the most part not working out. Every relationship you're ever going to be in is going to fail until one doesn't. And you don't know which one that is until you're in it, which means to find that one that isn't going to quote unquote fail, you have to risk getting into new relationships. And that's how that relationship, the one that works out, for the long term, where one of you lands in the funeral home at the end and you win, you got to get in them. You got to go on those first dates. So that's just an opportunity cost. That's, you know, the real price of admission that you have to pay, or the very first price of admission that you're going to have to pay to be in relationships. There's a lot of people out there who, just as you feel your social skills have degraded, you haven't been getting out much, you've been working at home. A lot of people out there who feel the same way about that churn. They find it draining and enervating to make that emotional investment in someone, to get to know someone, and then for it not to work out. And I think it helps if you look at that process of that investment of time and energy, even if it doesn't work out with this person that you just invested that time and energy, you're honing, you're using that muscle, that investment of time and energy muscle, and you're getting practice at it. So then when a person comes along that you could make a long-term commitment to, who would like to make a long-term commitment to you, you have the skills, your muscles are primed and ready to go, and you can do that thing, which means all those relationships that didn't work out, all those first dates that didn't lead to second or third dates, or 2-3 month relationships that didn't lead to 50, 60 year relationships, they served a purpose. They set you up for success later. If you exit those relationships, you know, learning the lessons, scrutinizing your own behaviors, making sure you're not shitting the bed in some way that you're not aware of, and making the same mistakes over and over and over again, they're costing your relationships. If you learn the lessons from the ones that don't work out and exercise those muscles around, you know, making an emotional investment, an investment of time, you set yourself up for success long term. But man, there's no way to avoid that early part of the process, including the failures that are built in and that are not without meaning or value. They are. So it might help if you looked at them that way. And I'm using, of course, fail and failure in my response to you in quotes. I don't think a relationship that ends with both people getting out of it alive, whether that relationship was 2 dates or 20 years, was necessarily a failure. If people learned and grew on those 2 dates or in that 20 years and then moved on and were better partners for their next partner, or better just for themselves alone going forward, the relationship was a success. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Harry's. You shouldn't have to choose between a great shave and a fair price. And with Harry's, you don't have to. Harry's delivers a close, comfortable shave at a fair price, as low as $2 per refill. How do they do it, you ask? Well, they bought a German razor blade factory that's been making blades for over 100 years. Harry's design team combined a weighted ergonomic handle with a textured grip and a flex hinge. It is a smart, simple, elegant razor designed for delivering a close shave along the contours of your face. It's nice to use a well-made object in such an intimate way every day, in such an intimate act as shaving. That's why me and my husband love our Harry's razors. We love them so much, we don't just use them on our faces. Harry's stands behind the quality of their blades so much that they have a 100% money-back guarantee at harrys.com. And for a limited time, Harry's has made their exclusive offer even better for listeners of the Lovecast. Now, customers who come to Harry's from the Lovecast get a special offer and a Harry's starter set and body wash at harrys.com/savage. You'll get a 5-blade razor, weighted Truman handle, foaming shave gel, a travel blade cover, and a travel size body wash. There's never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com, that's harrys.com/savage, to redeem your offer today. Let them know the Lovecast sent you, harrys.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. So I have a question about sex during COVID. You've frequently reminded listeners that now is not the time to be fucking strangers. So my question is, when, Dan, when can we start having sex again? The thing is, I'm a body worker. I have a massage studio in my home where I provide erotic massage. And my massage can get pretty involved, pretty intimate. I love sucking face with clients. But for the past year, I have seen exactly one client, Dan, one. I'm going nuts. So my question is, after I get vaccinated, is it okay for me to see clients again? I'm not asking, is it okay for them? They're all adults. They can make their own decisions. But is it okay for me? Once I've been vaccinated, can I start seeing clients again? What's your opinion, Dan? When can we start having sex?
More than a year ago, we had on the show Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis from the New York Department of Health, and his advice for having sex during the pandemic was to suck ass, not face. You can see clients, you can give massages, there is risk. You can minimize that risk by your clients wearing masks and by you wearing masks. It's the face-to-face, it's the breathing on each other, it's the air droplets that presented the risk for COVID-19 transmission. So that's why a lot of the fun and kinky sex advice out there for people who are going to have sex around reducing risk, around harm reduction, not risk elimination, just risk reduction here, was to use glory holes, to get creative, to wear masks during sex, to eat ass, not suck face. So there's nothing about right now, even in your unvaccinated state, that would prevent you from making an informed choice based on the risk assessment that you can make personally, and your clients can do the same, make an informed choice based on their awareness of the risks. Once you're vaccinated, it's much safer for you to see clients. A vaccinated person, according to the best medical authorities at the moment, can still get infected, can still get COVID-19. The infection will be less severe, less debilitating, less likely to result in hospitalization or death, but still infected and potentially infectious. So your clients, if they haven't been vaccinated, are taking a risk that you, as a vaccinated person, aren't taking as great a risk. If a client comes in who's got COVID-19 and you're vaccinated and you don't, you could still get it. You just probably aren't going to die from it. And if you get it and you're seeing a bunch of clients, you could pass it along. Those are the risks you need to take into account while you're making your choices. Seems to me that it would be reasonable for you to see your clients and provide the services that you provide, erotic massage, and skip the face sucking part. Suck something else. Keep the faces covered. Keep your mask on. Let them keep their mask on. It is safe, we've been told by the CDC, for people who are vaccinated to get together in small groups. There is no smaller group than two people alone in a room together with one giving the other a massage. So if you're vaccinated and your clients are vaccinated, go for it. But until you're vaccinated and until you know that your clients or all your clients are vaccinated, there are risks. You get to decide for yourself as an adult what risks you're willing to run. The only caveat, the only complication to that usual the risks are mine calculus for us during this pandemic is that if you get infected because you took risks and then you're around other people who are in your pod who are trying to be safe, the risks you took could wind up endangering them. And so you have to factor that in as well. Do you live with anybody? Are you taking care of any elders? Do you live in a home with more than one person? Whatever risks you're taking in the massage studio are their risks too. And as a moral agent, you have to factor that in when you're making your own judgments about the risks you're willing to take, because you're not just in this pandemic taking them for yourself.
Hello, I'm a 12-year-old girl and I masturbate like a lot. And I know that boys have higher libidos than girls, but I was just wondering, how much do boys my age masturbate?
Joining me by phone to help answer this question, Nick Kroll, comedian, actor, producer, and co-creator and co-star of Big Mouth, which is hands down the smartest thing that has ever been on television about being 12 years old. Hey, Nick, how are you?
I'm so good. I mean, hearing that intro specifically from you, I'm much better now hearing that intro. Thank you.
Well, before we get to you're welcome, and thank you for coming on my dumb podcast. But before we get to the question, which I think is pretty easily answered, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about Big Mouth, which, if anyone out there isn't already familiar with it, it's about a group of friends in middle school in the suburbs of New York, Nick, Andrew, Missy, Jay, Jesse, Matthew, my personal favorite, Lola, who you play, as well as playing Nick. And I gotta ask, the fourth season just went out and I devoured it, and there's two more seasons coming and I can't wait. But the first question I gotta ask you is, how the hell do you get away with it?
You know, I think we get away with it because it's animated. We have adults voicing these kids. And I think you know, we came in at a point in Netflix where the lesson that they were learning was the more provocative you are, the more their viewers gravitate towards it. And they have stayed true to that from the beginning and never really, they've not shied away from the weirder, more explicit things that we try to talk about. And I think, truthfully, our little thesis is the bigger the jokes, the bigger the emotion. And the bigger the emotion, the bigger the jokes. The one really allows for the other.
What I see on the show, and then I just sit there going, if it was the 1990s, there would be congressional hearings. Jesse Helms would be on C-SPAN ranting about your show. Talking vulvas, kids swapping dick pics. And season four, I got to say, I had to leave the room when Andrew gave birth at camp. And I'm not going to say to what Andrew gave birth at camp. And I'm just always impressed. The show is so smart. And a lot of the artistic choices are just so, in this way, wise and would be helpful for 12-year-olds to watch, particularly the way you've taken things like shame, anxiety, depression, even puberty, and represented those things as external forces acting on these children as monsters. And I think that's just a helpful framing for kids to understand puberty. It's this thing that's happening to them, not necessarily a thing that they're doing.
Mm. Yes. Well, thank you for that. And I think that, again, it is partly being animated allows us to create these anthropomorphized versions of shame, depression, anxiety, hormones. In the best way, the nicest thing that we do hear from people is parents or educators talking about their kids, that it gives them a platform or a vocabulary to start to talk about these things in a productive way that isn't as scary. So you could say, like, my hormone monster made me, you know, jerk off, you know, yesterday when I was supposed to be doing my homework, or I'm feeling the depression kitty a lot today.
Or jerk off at my grandfather's wake.
yes, that as well. So, you know, someone wrote an article early on about us saying that Big Mouth Kids zero fucks. And we have tried to stay true to that. So anytime that we have where we're trying to talk about a really serious issue of whatever it is, that we are trying to make sure that if we're trying to talk about something very serious, that we are at always times balancing that with big, crazy jokes of Andrew giving birth to whatever. You guys, if you haven't watched it, you will find out at the beginning of season four. But I have found very much that one hand washes the other. The more honest, truthful, and emotionally driven we are, the bigger, the crazier, the more insane jokes we can have, and vice versa.
I had one more question before we get to this question from a 12-year-old who listens to my show. They're out there. Nick Birch, basically one of the two leads, you play Nick Birch. He has parents. And I've talked a lot about this kind of parent. Like, it's terrible to have parents who will never talk to you about sex. It's also, I think, equally tormenting to have parents who will never shut up about sex. The parents who are too comfortable talking with their kids about sex and their kids' friends about sex. We always called them, when I was younger, we called those the nudist parents, whether your parents were naked or not, if you had the nudist parents. And they made you feel uncomfortable. And where is that sweet spot for parents where you're not Diane and Elliot, who make you uncomfortable because they will talk with you about sex, and you're not Bill and Judy Savage, my parents, who wouldn't talk to you about sex.
Right. Well, I mean, I personally am someone who's, I believe, very much in sort of the golden mean and in moderation, and figuring out when you're not talking to your kids about sex or when you are talking to your kids about sex constantly, I think the question to ask is, who is this serving? Are you trying? Yes, if you're not talking about your kids about sex, you're doing a disservice to these kids, because they're having to learn these things on their own, and they're going to go about it in ways that might not ultimately be the healthiest version of it for them. Or you're talking about it so much to show how, you know, down or cool you are, that it causes them to sort of reject it, the nudist parents per se. And I think it's a question of, if you're the one who's talking constantly about it, are you doing that because you think your kid needs to hear about this? Or are you doing this because you want to feel like you're the parent who's so cool and opening all these doors for them? So I guess it's just constantly asking, who is this for? You know, like, who are you really serving here? And hopefully you can find somewhere in between where you're demystifying a lot of this, but not talking about it so much that your kid feels weird or like they're not, their needs aren't being met, which is sometimes, I need less, you know?
All right, let's circle back to this question, and I'll remind everybody what the question was because it's been a little while because I really just want to talk with you about Big Mouth. 12-year-old girl, 12-year-old listener of the Savage Lovecast, likes to masturbate. She knows boys have higher libido than girls and was wondering how much boys masturbate at 12.
Well, my answer would be there is no monolith. Boys are – I wasn't masturbating at all at 12. I hadn't hit puberty. I was kind of, you know, I was playing with my little guy, but I wasn't masturbating. And I don't know, and you would know better than me, whether boys do have a higher libido at that point. Because I think what I've learned from my show and talking to our writers and talking to lots of people is that there were plenty of girls who were masturbating a lot and who were obsessed with masturbating in a way that some boys weren't. So I think for me, there is no marker of how much is too much or whether boys masturbate more or whether she's keeping up with the boys. I think it's like what feels good to you and is it dominating your life? So I would say if it feels good and you're enjoying it, then what a blessing that you get to masturbate. But I don't know. I mean, I think there are certain boys who are masturbating a ton.
It's weird because boys masturbating is sort of affirmed and expected, and it's sort of it's acknowledged as a thing that boys do, which I think makes some boys feel more comfortable with themselves and with the fact that they masturbate, and therefore then more likely to masturbate. It becomes self-reinforcing. Mm. Also, I've always thought there's a physiological thing. Like, I remember my first orgasm when I ejaculated, and I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I have a marker to hit. And a lot of young girls who masturbate or pleasure themselves, they don't have that same sort of visual payoff,
finale.
Representation.
Yeah.
And they don't have the finale. They also don't have a refractory period like boys do. Of course, a teenage boy has like an 11-second refractory period. Yeah. And so I somehow think that, you know, when you make generalizations, and I'd say this to the caller, the 12-year-old, you make generalizations about 3.5 billion males and 3.5 billion females. There'll be hundreds of millions of exceptions. As a 12-year-old girl, you're obviously an exception if you're listening to the podcast and you're calling my show.
Yeah.
But I think it's broadly and generally true that boys may masturbate more because of the cultural affirmation, but also because their dicks let them know when they're done.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think that in talking, again, talking to women about their experiences, so many of them were not aware that what they were doing was masturbating. They were just sort of humping the corner of a couch or had a glowworm or were doing whatever and weren't aware of what they were doing. Or they were aware of it and they were somehow ashamed of it, because I do agree our culture has sort of given the A-OK to boys to masturbate, that it's just like boys will be boys. And for girls, it's been a different thing. There's just so much more mystery shrouding the vagina and the whether it's your period or orgasms that or hair, all the things that, like, for whatever reason, girls are told that their vaginas are something to not be celebrating in the way that we've culturally told boys to celebrate their penises. And so I think you're right. And I do think there is a difference also in one can masturbate and not have an orgasm and have a wonderful experience, or one could have constant orgasms and be not actually experiencing a tremendous amount of pure pleasure. So like all of sexuality that I'm finding over time is there's a great spectrum inside of it. And if what you're doing is enjoyable to you and safe and not harming others and not harming yourself, then you do you.
Nick Kroll, comedian, actor, producer, co-creator, co-star of Big Mouth, now in season 4 on Netflix. There are 2 more seasons promised to us and coming our way. And it's genius. The whole show is genius. And I'm so thrilled I got to talk with you about it. Thank you so much.
Dan, I'm a big fan. Thanks. It's a real pleasure to be here with you.
We've got more Nick Kroll on The Magnum. We hang out. We talk some more about the show. He takes more listener questions. You can subscribe to the Savage Lovecast Magnum Edition at savagelovecast.com. You can try it out for as little as $5.
Hi, Dan. My name is Steve, and I'm in Phoenix. And I have a question about the word butthurt. I used this recently, and I've always considered myself a supporter of LGBTQ rights. But I used it recently just kind of an offhand way, and someone accused me of using a slur. A gay slur or homophobic slur, to be more precise. I was wondering what you think about that, and if it's if you consider it to be a slur. I guess I'm just interested in your opinion.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that only gay men have butts and only gay men can feel physical pain. So, of course, butthurt is an anti-gay slur. I think it's fine. I think you can say butthurt. Everybody has butts. Everybody's butts have nerve endings. Anal sex, if it's a reference to penetrative sex and being sore afterwards, not just gay men have penetrative sex. So I'm fine with it. This individual gay man is fine with it. If you and I were friends and you want to describe me as butthurt after we had an argument, I wouldn't object. I wouldn't feel like you'd used an anti-gay slur. In fact, I'd long, in my innocence, assumed that butthurt was kind of a reference to having your ass kicked or getting your ass spanked. It was about that kind of hurt. But of course, now I've done a little reading. I did a little Googling, talked to the tech savvy at Risk Youth, and I have been instructed that it is a reference to the kind of hurt that a person experiences when they get their ass fucked. Maybe my frame of reference around ass fucking is different, because ass fucking that I'm involved with typically involves pleasure for both parties, the ass fucker and the ass fucky. And the soreness or awareness afterwards that your ass has been fucked is kind of a lovely little souvenir of the ass fucking, not anything punishing or painful. And so, yeah, I guess my personal experience with getting butt fucked prevented me from making the leap to butt hurt is a reference to butt fucking. But I appear to be an outlier and an anomaly. So you might want to be careful using butthurt in front of your gay friends who may feel that you're disparaging anal intercourse, which is ours and ours alone. But I, of course, I'm not going to tell you not to use this expression that I myself use all the time. So have at. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some of your tweets over the last week. Greta Berensdorf tweets, sitting in my car on a lovely spring day in a lovely suburban neighborhood, windows down, eating lunch, listening to the Savage Lovecast. Maybe the kids playing outside don't need to know the best cuckolding practices now, but it might serve them well in the future. You never know. Couldn't hurt. Well, maybe, hopefully, couldn't hurt. And finally, Queer Oddball Coconut tweets, hearing at Fake Dan Savage use the phrase taking the piss in episode 752 of the Savage Lovecast. Don't know, but hearing this made me giggle a bit. Reading your tweet made me wonder a bit if people in the piss play community object taking the piss, which means to mock someone. That expression means to mock someone. For the same reasons buttfuckers and cocksuckers object to people using butthurt and cocksucker as insults. I imagine we'll find out in this week's calls. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag #SavageLovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, I'm calling in response to the OBGYN resident who was looking for feedback on how to make his female patients more comfortable. As a patient who has had multiple visits to multiple OBGYNs, I have to say the most uncomfortable experience I ever had was with a male OBGYN who refused to look me in the eye. He refused to make eye contact, even when speaking to me. It just made me uncomfortable that he looked straight at my vagina and I was in this really vulnerable position, but he couldn't even look me in the eye. Just made me uncomfortable, and I didn't go back to see him after that. I also recently had a pelvic ultrasound, and the technician who administered it really set me at ease in many of the ways that your guest expert suggested. She let me know that at any point during the exam, if I felt uncomfortable, whether physically or emotionally, to just say the word and she would stop. And that really meant a lot to me. As a victim of sexual assault, I'm pretty good at controlling my emotions, but sometimes I do get triggered. And knowing that she would understand and not judge me if I had to put a stop to things, even momentarily, just really helped me feel empowered in that moment when you are so vulnerable.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to one of your responses to a question on episode 752. So it was about the girl whose ex-boyfriend had stolen her vibrator. He was probably using it. Like, I and at least one of my other girlfriends have had a guy that we dated take one of our vibrators and or dildos or whatever. And my girlfriend actually had a guy who didn't put it back clean. So that's how she knew he was using it. But I'm really surprised that you didn't say that maybe that's what he was doing.
Hello, Dan. Calling about episode 752 about what to say when somebody thinks someone is choosing to be gay. And I've done this before and it's worked really well, but straight dudes like, yeah, they're choosing to be gay. And I say, oh, so you chose to be straight? And it just knocks them down. They're like, what? I'm like, yeah, you chose that, huh? So you could just up and decide tomorrow to be gay, couldn't you? And they're pretty much like, no, I can't. I'm like, well, that's how it's like. So that's all.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064, or you can use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question or comment, and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Tickets go on sale on Wednesday, March 31st for another Hump's Greatest Hits, this time Volume 3, a whole new collection of some of our favorite dirty short films from over the last 16 years of Hump. Go to humpfilmfest.com to watch the trailer and grab your tickets now. And if you love Hump and you love weed, you might want to check out Hump's sister film festival, Spliff, the film fest made by stoners for stoners. Go to spliffffilmfest.com to watch a trailer and learn more. Follow me on Twitter @FakeDanSavage. Follow Nick Kroll on Twitter @NickKroll. You can also find him under that same handle on TikTok and Instagram. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.